Two legs, good. Four legs, better. Any more or less than that, it's a party. It's the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
I am the little red rooster. Two legs and a crow for days.
It's 9:35 and we're back here with the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show. And we've been talking all about wild birds and the birding season that has begun. And our guest this morning is Kirby Adams. And Kirby, I mentioned before the break about having seen a picture of a cardinal that half of it was the dull color that you see on the females, and the other half was the brightest, most beautiful red that you ever saw, and there was like a line down the middle on it. And I was amazed at that. Tell us what I saw, and how does that happen?
Well, you saw exactly what it looked like to you. It was a bird that the left half of it is female, and the right half is male. It's a condition that's called gynandromorphism, which is a genetic term for something that is exactly that, half and half, with split bilaterally down the body. So it's a really weird thing to look at. It looks fake, like somebody painted it like that, but that's actually how the bird is, and it's very uncommon, extremely uncommon in birds, but because people are out looking at birds a lot, they tend to find them when they're out there, so then you see pictures of them show up like that. As far as what causes it, I wear a lot of hats, but I'm not a geneticist, so I can't really get into the details of that for you, but it is a known condition, and scientists are always happy to see an animal like that and be able to study it and what its behaviors are, if it's any different from typical males or females of that species.
Yeah, I'm wondering, among birders, I just saw this particular bird that I haven't seen, and I've got it now checked off my list, but there's also the unusual bird that is of that species but looks different, abnormality, if you will, or maybe something like this. What excitement level within the birding community is there for the true typical bird that everybody's searching for? And then how much excitement is there when somebody finds something that is truly different like this?
Well, there's a ton of excitement when a bird like that shows up. And there's also been in the South and a couple other places, a cardinal that was bright yellow, not the typical red. It was a male, but it was yellow. And that just generated all kinds of talk, all of the birding communities online. There were pictures of that being shared over and over again. But as soon as somebody found that, they'd come back in and the whole conversation would start up again about the yellow cardinal. It almost became a joke after a while that every week or so we had a yellow cardinal discussion because somebody new found it. So it causes a ton of excitement. And that's great when somebody can see something like that, and it really brings back to life a bird that's pretty common, the usual red cardinal. We don't think about them much, but that is a really awesome-looking bird. It's a bright red bird that lives in our yards. When birders from Europe come over here, one of the first things they ask is, please show me a cardinal. That's the thing that they want to see because they've seen it in picture books but have never seen one in real life. So they just want to see the regular old red cardinal. But we're so used to them, we take them for granted. And then when a yellow one pops up, we're like, wow, that's crazy. So it's all perspective of what you're used to seeing.
Can you think of any others that, maybe didn't catch our eye through Facebook, but maybe the birder community?
There are often hawks that, like the common red-tailed hawks we have around here, that are almost solid white, almost an albino condition, sometimes with still the tail being red. So that makes for a really crazy-looking bird. If you go up north of Lansing, areas like Maple River, where there are a lot of hawks and a lot of big open areas where you can see them, you may see a bird like that. There was one up there, I believe, last fall, almost completely albino, red-tailed hawk. So that's another one that generates a lot of interest when something like that is found.
Now, Kirby, I'm understanding this year that because of the weather that we've had, there have been a lot of birds that usually go much further north that have been hanging out in our area because of the weather that we've had. Can you talk a little bit about those birds, and is there anything to see there?
Yeah, you're mostly talking about the finches in that case. Things like purple finches, pine siskins, which are a relative of the goldfinch, pine grosbeaks, evening grosbeaks, some of those birds that very rarely get down this far. You'll see them in the UP in winter, or maybe down into the like the upper reaches of the lower peninsula, but you don't usually see them in the Lansing area. This year we had all of those birds. Common redpole was another one, a small bird, small finch with a bright red head. They have come through in great numbers this winter, especially early in the winter. Some of them even went the whole way into the southern states. And now they're starting to come back through. Some of them have already headed north again, but it is a time to be looking at your feeders and see if there's something out there that you don't recognize. It's been a great year for finches like that. And it's, the weather has a little bit to do with it, but even more than that, it has to do with what kind of food sources are available in Canada, where they typically live in the winter, or the northern regions. If there's good cones on the conifer trees up there, or good berries on any of the berry trees, they'll stay up there for the winter. If the cone crop is bad, which it is periodically, then they head south. Mm. Well, it turns out this year there was a very poor cone crop and a very poor berry crop across most of Canada. So they predicted in August that we were going to be getting tons of finches this winter, and sure enough, when October hit, they started heading south in droves.
And do some of the tree problems that we always hear about, funguses and parasites and such, do those type of things have substantial impacts on distribution of birds?
Yes, they do. Some good and some bad. In some cases, like the emerald ash borer that has killed many of our ash trees in this area, woodpeckers are kind of enjoying that because it's giving them more habitat of dead trees to drill cavities in, and they're eating the actual bugs that are causing that problem. But in other cases, you have birds that like to feed on the pollen from ash trees that aren't doing well. So it's some birds are winning and some are losing because of things like that. The spruce trees in Canada is another case. There's a spruce budworm that's kind of ebbs and flows up there, and when it's really abundant, some of the warblers that like to eat them become very abundant. But other birds, like maybe the rusty blackbirds that like to use the habitat where those trees grow, suffer because then the trees are dying. So it's an imbalance when anything like that happens. Some win and some lose, but ultimately it's not a good thing, of course.
Now, Kirby, if people are interested in attracting these birds to their backyard or even their front porches, how would they go about doing it? What would be your advice in order to provide birds the things that they want so that they do come and visit with some degree of regularity?
The number one thing I can say is plant native plants. Find a nursery that sells native trees and shrubs and wildflowers and put as many of those in as you can, and avoid things that aren't native. Do some research on that. Find out what should be living here and plant that stuff, because that's what the birds have evolved to use as food and habitat. So that's going to be the best thing. You can also provide water. Put out some bird baths, put a pond in your backyard. Rick will help you out with that. And that's a water source for lots of birds to visit, not just the herons that may eat the fish that you don't want to get eaten, but also some other guys. And also put out feeders. Keep your feeders clean and stocked with sunflower seeds and suet and thistle seed and things like that, especially in the winter. Like I was just talking about with the finches, you'll see some weird birds maybe that you didn't expect to find if you put some of that food out. But it's all about food, shelter, and water. That's what every animal needs. That's what the birds want. So if you provide those things in your yard, no matter how small your yard is, you're probably going to get some birds.
Now, how important is it to use natural items for it? Because I was reading that if you have like a plastic birdhouse, that isn't necessarily very good for them. You always typically want to use wood and natural products to do it. And if you keep them clean, then you can expect regular visits from things like bluebirds.
Yes. Yeah, it's always better to use wood, and things like plastic can generate a lot of heat And when they get hot, they can release some weird chemicals. So I usually try to avoid plastics or metals and anything like that. Birds that live in cavities typically live in trees, so they're used to being in wood, so that's generally the best thing. So you can put up a bluebird house or a wren house. I have a little wren house that I hang just off my back deck every year, and sure enough, every about April 25th, a male house wren comes in and sets up shop in it, and then I take it down when they're done breeding in July and wash it out and hang it up around April.
Now, Kirby, we're out of
natural products like that are great.
Okay. We are about out of time, but before we leave you, if people are interested in learning more about birding, do you have any websites or any suggestions for where they can go to really study up on it and become a little bit smarter on the subject?
Well, one of the best places I could recommend would be the American Birding Association. It's aba.org is their website. There are some great people there. I do writing for them and help them out with a lot of stuff. But it's just an organization of people who enjoy birding and birds and conservation and everything fun about it. So you'll find a lot of things there, including a website that helps you identify birds that you can't identify on your own. You put a picture up and the experts swarm in and help you identify it.
Well played. Thank you very much, Kirby Adams. We always appreciate talking with you, and we look forward to speaking with you again. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lee.
Oh, it's our pleasure. And Rick, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, we'll talk with the folks from Harris Nature Center right here on 1320 WILS.